Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and today we're going to be talking about eco-friendly fabric pots with our guest, Kevin Esperito. He's an author, founder of the Epic Gardening website, podcast, and YouTube channel. He has a new book out. We'll talk about the book. It's called Grow Bag Gardening, the revolutionary way to grow bountiful vegetables, herbs, fruits, and flowers in lightweight, eco-friendly fabric pots. Long title, but a good book. I tell you what, we'll talk about it with him. And certainly, we will answer your questions and comments and maybe share your experiences with us as well. What would you like to know about growing plants in bags? Join in. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. And Kevin Esperito, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. It's great to be back again.
I think let's just start with the basic. What is a grow bag?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting little phrase, isn't it? I guess anything could be a grow bag if you really think about it. But what I'm typically referring to are those pots that you'll find at the local nursery that look like they're made out of like a woven sort of fabric. And it just looks like a flexible fabric bag.
So, and there are specific bags. Will any bag work?
Well, any bag will work. I mean, people can grow in a reusable grocery bag if you want to. You could grow in a burlap sack. But there are some that are out there specifically called grow bags, and those are the ones that I'm typically referring to. Some of the ones you might see at the nursery, there's one from a company called Smart Pots, and it looks like a black little tote bag that you could fold and bend, and it looks like it's made out of fabric, but it's made out of a recycled woven plastic fabric.
Hmm. So what are the advantages of using a grow bag over just other gardening containers?
Yeah, so for me, when I first started gardening, I was gardening in very small spaces, and so containers was the only way. I had no other option, really. And when I was growing in those, you know, standard plastic nursery pots, you're going to get the plant circling, right? The roots are going to circle at the bottom of the pot almost always, especially if you're growing something vigorous like a, you know, mint or tomatoes or something like that. And the reason why that happens is because the plant's roots don't get a signal to stop growing. Once they hit the side of the pot, they're really going to hit just a little bit of water, maybe a little soil and nutrients, and they're going to circle around the pot. They'll hit the bottom of the pot. They'll circle around the bottom of the pot. And then sometimes when you pull the plant out, maybe you're transplanting or maybe you're changing it out for something else to plant in there, you have a root ball that basically is the exact shape of the pot. And it's just not a great health. It's just not super healthy for the plant to be growing that way. And so then the question is, okay, well, what do grow bags do that another container doesn't do? Well, it's kind of like I was saying at the beginning, it's this porous sort of woven fabric material. And when the plant hits the edge of that pot, it's going to hit way more air than it would water. And as soon as it hits that, the tip of the root actually ends up dying, which sounds bad, but in fact it is good because it kills the tip of the root, so it prevents the circling, and it just forces the plant to make more roots, more from the center of that root mass. So when you pull a plant that's been grown in a grow bag out of the pot, you see a nice, fibrous, really well-structured root system, which basically means you have a much healthier plant. So that's the principal benefit of growing in grow bags, although there are many more.
Yeah. Is that called air pruning?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And there's a bunch of different pots that have done this in the past, but I find personally the grow bag does the best job because the whole thing is porous instead of having a pot with like little holes poked into the side. There's designs like that I've seen out there as well.
Yeah. So what, taking the other side, so to speak, what are downsides, if any, to grow bags?
Yeah, so I would say the downside is they're typically a little more expensive than your classic terracotta pot. I mean, I'm a huge terracotta fan, and in fact, it is also slightly porous. Water will come out of the sides and at least a little bit of air, but grow bags are going to be more expensive. Granted, they're a lot harder to break, and I don't know about you, Larry, but I've broken my fair share of terracotta in my 10 years or so gardening. The other thing that might be a downside is just they may not last as long as, let's say, you know, a high quality plastic pot or something like that. just because they are porous and they are a little bit easier to scuff up and stuff. But as long as you take good care of them, they last pretty long. So I would say the biggest downside is probably just they're a little bit pricier.
I was trying to think about my terracotta pots. I don't think I have a single one that doesn't at least have a crack in it.
Yeah, same here. I have a collection of broken pots in like a little bucket in my backyard right now.
Jan emailed that she's seen your videos about container gardening, and you always level the larger containers. She has a slightly sloping yard, slopes mm-hmm. away from the house. With no way to level it up, how much of a problem will that be? What are the concerns with leveling the large containers?
Yeah, that's a little tricky, huh? If you're growing in a grow bag. I mean, I think what I might do in Jan's case is I would just shore up the low side, maybe put some stakes in the ground or put some posts in the ground and try to build like a little platform maybe. And you could run that along the whole slope and you could put a bunch of containers there. I don't know how to do it unless you're willing to dig into that slope, though, because you either have to shore up the low side or kind of dig in to the high side a bit. I know when I do my raised beds, and when people are asking how to do a raised bed on the slope, I typically recommend cutting into the slope a little bit and building the raised bed into the slope. And then you can put like a stake on that sloped side for a little bit of retaining. But otherwise, I mean, it's very tricky. If the slope's big enough, you can't just plop it down, because otherwise the grow bag's going to go tumbling down the hill.
And we don't want that to happen, for sure. Oh, man.
No, no.
But if it's a little, you know, if it's not quite level, is that okay?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think if it's, sometimes that might even be beneficial if you think about it. I guess depending on the direction the slope is sloping towards, let's say it's a south-facing slope. That's actually pretty good, because sometimes in containers, you might get a little bit of the lip of the container actually shading out the soil for the beginning of the day. And if it's sloped in the right direction, it might actually give you more light access. So I wouldn't say it's always a bad thing, but you know, just make sure it's not going to go tumbling. You could stake it down or provide some sort of tie and stake it to the high side.
Kevin Esposito, our guest, as we talk with him about grow bag gardening. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call from Sandra in Libertyville. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Good, appreciate the call.
Okay, Kevin, I have used grow bags, and I also have used straw bale for gardening. I love the straw bale, but I'm not able to do it where I am now. I had problems with the grow bags, and one of the problems was that as the season went on, the dirt went lower and lower and lower, and I didn't want to add dirt because I would be suffocating the base of the plants. So that was one issue. The other issue, and I don't know if you can address this, I'm a vegan, and so I'm trying to understand what fertilizer I can use that's vegan in a grow bag, if there even is such a thing. Last year, my tomatoes were horrible in the grow bag, so I'm having some issues. I'm going to try it again this year for sure, because I think it's exciting and it's a learning experience.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, let's tackle your first question first then. I think the thing you'll see in almost any container or even a raised bed. I filled all my raised beds this year. I had the same problem as you, Sandy, is you're going to get a natural settling. And, you know, for me in my raised beds, for example, I might get 3-4 inches of settling as you fill it for the very first time. So one thing I would say when you're planting in a grow bag or any container is when you fill your soil up for the very first time in the grow bag, fill it all the way to the brim, like pick the bag up and pop it on the ground, and you'll settle it automatically. And then you can water it in once or twice. That'll give you a sense of how much it should drop. And then over the course of the season, if it's dropping, if the soil level's dropping a little bit, that's okay. That's pretty natural. And what you can do is just add some mulch over the top. And then when you refresh it for the next round of crops or the next season, then you can pull all that stuff out, give it a nice refresh, top it off with some more soil, and you're good to go. But I wouldn't say it's a huge problem as long as you fill it up adequately to start. And then the second thing, as far as the vegan mix, it's actually very tricky, like you were mentioning. You do want to, of course, avoid the things like chicken meal, you know, chicken manure, feather meal, these sorts of things. So two amendments that I think would be great additions would be alfalfa meal. So that's a fantastic one. And then cottonseed meal. Those are great ones to add in, and they're pretty well blended across the NPK spectrum. So I would take a look at that. And actually, in the book, Grow Bag Gardening, I do have a vegan fertilizer recipe that you can use.
Ah, there you go, Sandy. And Sandra, thank you so much for calling. And let's talk about, you mentioned the book. Let's talk about your book. Tell our listeners what it contains. It's really a cool book. It has lots of great photography and great ways to explain how things are done.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Well, yeah, so when we came on a long time ago for the first book, Field Guide to Urban Gardening, that was really just how to garden in general if you're a small space grower and you're looking for creative options. This one dives in, of course, like the name would imply, into a specific method, grow bags, and why I think they're so powerful. So I guess the best way to describe it is it's really a book about container growing and gardening principles in general. It just happens to frame all that around this really powerful method that I really like, which of course is the grow bags. And so, you know, we go into some very classic things like soil mixes and soil qualities and things like that. But of course, there's also these very specific techniques on how to get the most out of a grow bag, like how to manage your watering, which can be a tricky thing with grow bags sometimes, or the right type of combinations of plants. You can actually create a pollinator bag and put it into a specific area of the garden that you want to bring more bees and wildlife to. So it's basically a technique book with tons of creative options on how to grow and care for all the plants in the grow bag.
Yeah, it's a very cool book. Kevin Espirito, our guest today, and the title of the book is Grow Bag Gardening, the subtitle, The Revolutionary Way to Grow Bountiful Vegetables, Herbs, Fruits, and Flowers in Lightweight, Eco-Friendly Fabric Pots. You can join in too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We had some callers who have used grow bags. Have you used them? What did or didn't you like about them? Maybe you've never used them. What questions do you have? I hope you'll join in. And we can get into some general areas. There certainly, Kevin can talk about disease and other kinds of issues that may come up connected with it. Number to call again, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mehler for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here with my guest, Kevin Espirito. And his new book is called Grow Bag Gardening. Great to have him along. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. One of the things I noticed in your book is there are a lot of different types, styles of bags out there. And you have many of them kind of, I think, featured in the book. How do you decide which to get?
Yeah, I was really intrigued to find all the different styles that are out there. So like you're saying, Larry, you've got these standard ones, like maybe a 5 or 7 gallon, 10, 15 gallon grow bag, just a cylinder. And then you get into some of the wilder and crazier ones. I've got an 100 gallon grow bag in my front yard right now, which I'm growing. Last year I did cucumbers and Thai hot chilies in that, and it was very prolific. This year I just planted ginger and turmeric, and it's hopefully coming up pretty soon. And that's very, very wide. So it's still a circle in shape, but it's very wide and short. So it could be good to fill out a specific space, right? So you start thinking about almost the geometry of it and how it would fit into a particular space. But then you get into some of the funkier ones like you're mentioning. I call some of these the pop-up raised bed design, where a lot of these companies are now making ones that will just fold into maybe a 2x4 foot by 1 foot tall bed. And effectively, at that point, you're really dealing with more of a raised bed approach than you would be in a container. I mean, a raised bed is just a really big container, but, you know, it is a different method, and there are some different techniques there. So I find that those ones are really interesting. Let's say you're a renter, Larry. You're in a small space like I used to be, and you don't want to build a bed. Your carpentry skills aren't very strong, or the price of wood is too expensive, whatever. Well, you can grab one of these big bag beds, I guess they're called, and just pop it open. It installs very quickly. And then when you leave or when the season's done, you can just fold it up and it compacts down really small. And a whole raised bed could be, you know, fit into the size of like a little backpack. It's really interesting. So there's a lot of different models. And there's even some where you can grow multiple plants in the same bag. So I call these the multi-pocket grow bags. These ones I find are really, really good if you're a small space kitchen gardener, patio gardener, balcony gardener, because these ones, Larry, these ones are, let's say, a 10-gallon grow bag. And then on the side of the grow bag, there'll be some slits with little pockets sewn in. And so you can plant on top like you would a normal container. Let's say you put lettuce on top, right? And then in the bottom on these slits, you can cut in and you can plant rosemary, oregano, sage, thyme, whatever, and you could have a salad in a bag and everything you would need to grow a salad right there in the bag. So there's a lot of different creative options. I think it's only really gated by what are you trying to do and what kind of space do you have.
Yeah, there's some really cool, you have some really cool ideas in the book. Sandra called and wondered if the materials that the bags are made of could be toxic or leach out into the soil.
No, not really. I mean, I think the type of plastic that's used, and not all, keep in mind, not all of these are plastic. A lot of them are made from recycled plastic as well. So there's an okay sustainability element there. But over time, the studies have really not shown too much issue with leaching, especially if you're growing it. And like, let's say you're mulching the top of the bag and the soil. The sun is the only thing that's going to degrade the plastic over time, and that's only happening to the outer layer, not the inner layer. So there's really not a huge issue there.
Gianni in Montello, will go to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I think he partially answered my questions. I was wondering if there were various sizes and what is the range of, you know, the capacity of grow bags. And I have to freely admit, I've never heard of this before. So I have three raised beds made of bricks that I use and wood. And but this sounds interesting, but I've never heard of it. So and additionally, the price, what is the price range? And then I want to ask you about growing turmeric, because I've never heard of growing it at home, but why not?
All right.
Sure, yeah. So let's say, you know, you're getting a 5-gallon pot in a grow bag style. You're probably looking at maybe, I would say, $10 for that. 10-gallon pot, $13. So it really does depend on the brand. Of course, if you get ones with colors or fancy features, it's going to get a little bit more expensive. And so that's probably the price range you're looking at, which really isn't that much more expensive than your standard container. And then as far as turmeric, that was the question, right? How to grow turmeric?
Yeah. Yep.
Turmeric. So this is going to be actually my first season growing turmeric, but I have grown ginger before. And as far as my research shows, it's more or less the same process. And so with ginger, what you're going to do is you're going to take, you can do this from a fresh ginger that you buy at the grocery store. You could grab organic ginger and you could do this. But ginger is a rhizome. The part of it that we eat is the rhizome, which is an underground stem. And what you'll do is you'll grab a chunk of ginger. You want to look for the eyes start to sprout out, right? And that's typically when you would maybe think the ginger is a little too old to use because it's starting to regrow itself. But in the context of gardening, that would be a great time to start using ginger. And so what you want to do is a pretty rich mix of soil, well draining, but not super well draining, and bury that little rhizome chunk maybe 2 to 4 inches deep in the soil, cover it up with a little bit of mulch. Wait. It'll take some time to sprout, but once it does, it gets prolific. And ginger and turmeric both want relatively long, warm days, not super, super hot, and they would prefer at least a little bit of humidity. So it's a long season crop, and if you're in, you know, Wisconsin, that can be a little challenging. So you'll probably need to supplement your ginger at the shoulders of the season. So at the beginning of the season, at the end, with some extra light, maybe indoors. So I would say grow bags or containers in general is a fantastic way to grow ginger and turmeric, especially in colder climates, because you're probably going to have to bring it indoors through the winter for sure. and then also in the beginning of the spring, end of fall as well. So that's my basic tips. You just want to keep it really well watered, and you can harvest it at any point in time, because what happens is the rhizome just sort of creeps along the soil horizontally, and you can break a piece off and harvest it, and you can let the rest continue to grow, or you can harvest the whole thing and plant some of the fresh chunks and restart the whole thing. So it's a really fun crop, and of course you can dehydrate it and you can make powders and stuff, so the harvest lasts for quite some time as well.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate the call. Ellie emailed that she's a container gardener in a very small apartment in Madison. She has had issues with fungus gnats, and she'd like to share the fix that finally worked. She simply covered the top of the soil in affected containers, all the containers to be safe, with about an inch of aquarium sand and some aquarium or horticultural gravel. The gnats can't lay their eggs on rocks or sand, apparently. What do you think of that?
That's actually a really good tip. I mean, it's hard for them to get down in there because they, like she's saying, they really do want to hang out in that first little layer of soil. I'll say a tip that seems to work for me, because gnats can be so frustrating and so annoying, is to kind of hit them from all angles. So you can get those yellow sticky traps, which they work, but all they do is trap the adults. But as soon as you trap an adult, that means that that adult's not laying eggs, and they can lay, I don't know, I think it's like 200 eggs per adult. So you're actually saving yourself from quite a bit of problems down the road. Another thing that seems to really work, there's a product called Mosquito Bits, and it's basically a brand that's inoculated with BT, which is an organic pesticide. It's actually just a bacteria that ends up killing the larva of the fungus gnats as well as mosquitoes. And so what I end up doing is you can either soak your BT bits, these mosquito bits, in water, and then you can water into your houseplants with that. And so if there's any fungus gnat larva in the soil, it should kill them. But you could also just put the mosquito bits on the top of the soil and water it in as well, and that should do a good job. So if you do that, plus the tip that that the caller also recommended, you're probably going to get rid of them pretty quickly. And I agree. They're one of the most frustrating indoor pests, for sure.
Yeah, they sure are. Thanks, Ellie. Appreciate the question. Mark in Kimberly, we'll go to you. Hi, Mark.
Well, I have a south-facing window, and on the sill, I got an area about 6 by 18 inches. And how do I make this rhubarb support itself well enough? Is that a problem? And how do I protect the sill from water damage?
Yeah, that's a good question. That would be pretty tricky with only 6 inches of depth on the sill. You're probably going to have to shore that up. If you want to do grow bags, like, you may want to put some sort of ledge there or something, because almost no grow bag is going to have a 6-inch diameter. You're going to want something a little bit more robust, like I would say like 3 to 5 gallons at a minimum. And you also bring up another good issue, which is how do you protect the sill? Because one of the benefits, right, is that the grow bags are porous, which also includes the whole bottom. And so a lot of the times you can just put a saucer on the bottom, and that'll help capture that runoff water. And also it'll help keep the grow bag well watered, because then it'll wick that water back up into the soil mix. But on a 6-inch depth by 18-inch long sill, you're probably going to have to build some sort of extension or something like that if you want to do a grow bag. Your sill, personally, to me, sounds like a really good fit for one of those long rectangular planters that would fit perfectly and snug up right against there with no risk of falling off. That's what I would say, at least.
Yeah, and if you wanted to use a grow bag, maybe I'm thinking about the height of the TV trays that most of us still have in the basement or someplace anyway. They're about probably the height, or maybe the height, of your windowsill, and you could set a TV tray. I've got some wooden ones that don't look bad. You could put a bag right on top.
And they'll look even better with some plants on them, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. So that's an idea too, Mark. Thank you very much for calling. Sherry in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Yeah, I am wondering if it takes more water when you use a grow bag, because the cost of water is a concern for us. And then the second thing is, I am wondering if I could use a grow bag to kind of make a raised bed where I have my tulips and daffodils and things, and if I could leave that out all winter, or if that's just not a possibility.
Yeah, so the watering is a great question, because they do tend to lose water a little quicker than your average container, and that's just because they're porous on all sides, including the bottom. So instead of one drainage hole in the bottom, the whole thing is a drainage hole, and then the sides also lose. So I have a whole section of the book that talks about this, because that is the one other downside besides cost, but I've figured out a bunch of different ways you can sort of prevent it, or at least lessen it. And the first would be something I think a lot of container gardeners maybe overlook, and that would be just mulching the top of your container. So if you mulch the top of the grow bag with maybe an inch or two of whatever your favorite mulch is, you could use micro bark or grass clippings. My personal favorite right now is just a shredded straw mulch, because it's light in color too, so it reflects the light pretty well. That's going to help with the watering quite a bit. Another thing I always say is you can get a grow bag that's like 1 or 2 or 3 gallons, but for me, I typically skew towards 5, 7, 10 gallons or greater, because the bigger the bulk of soil in that grow bag, the less it's going to dry out. Like I was saying earlier, Larry, we've got those huge, you know, raised bed style grow bags, you know, and at that point, there's so much soil in there that I would say they lose water only marginally more than a standard raised bed. So yeah, there's a couple different things that you can do to prevent that water loss. Another thing that I like to do with the grow bags is I actually water slightly more often, but with less water overall, which is kind of different than you might water an in-ground planting. You might water very deeply, but somewhat infrequently. I kind of reverse that with the grow bags. Just make sure I top them up and they're nice and adequately moist. And there's a bunch of other things that you can do. You could do drip irrigation. You could do a combination, right? You could put a big saucer at the bottom so it's capturing that runoff, and also make sure you mulch the top. A lot of different things you can do for the watering. As far as the grow bag outdoors with the tulips and the daffodils, you know, I wish I had a better advice there. I'm just now getting into some of these flowers, and I don't quite know if it's a good idea to do that or not, Larry. Maybe you've got some advice there.
I don't really. I was actually concentrating or thinking more of my vacation, and where I will be gone for a week. And in your book, I noted that you have a sort of a system to keep water in those plants while you're away, which essentially aligned bed of some sort.
Yeah, I called that the grow bag bathtub, which I thought was kind of a funny name. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people who are growing in grow bags, and that idea is just adapted from something I've seen a lot of people do, which is they've got kids, right? And they've got a little kiddie pool for their toddlers. And when their toddlers grow up, what do they do with the kiddie pool? They end up just putting all their containers in it if they go on vacation. And so what you do is you pop all your containers into something like a kiddie pool. In the book, I just built a simple frame. So I used 2x4, and then I stapled to the 2x4 frame just some permeable or non-permeable liner, like a pond liner or something like that, just so water can't get through it. And then if you're going on a vacation or a weekend trip, you cluster all your grow bags up into that little basin and then just fill it up with a few inches of water. And it's not going to last forever because, of course, it's going to evaporate and the water is going to wick up into the mix. But it's a little bit of a buffer. So if you have a hot weekend but you're going on a trip, just fill the grow bag bathtub up and it'll be good to go. And by the time you come back, you can hit it again with some water. And that actually kind of brings up another one of the watering strategies that helps you is just clustering all of your grow bags together. This works with containers too, but I think it works a little bit better with grow bags. If you cluster all your bags together, they're going to lose a lot less water. And the reason is pretty simple. So like we've said many, many times, it's porous on all sides, right? So the, you know, air is hitting it, it's evaporating out, all that kind of stuff. Well, if you cluster them together, there's just less ability for that to happen, right? Because some of the sides are just hitting other sides of grow bags and it's not going to evaporate as much that way. And so that's another good way to buffer it. So I find clustering all them together, putting them in a little kiddie pool or basin of some sort and filling that up with water when you go on a trip is a really, really good way to prevent any plant damage.
Roger had emailed, and you had mentioned drip irrigation, but he wondered about the using drip irrigation with the bags.
Yeah. So when I first moved in, I think last time I was on the show, Larry, we were talking about how I went from my old house, my small front yard garden, to this big urban lot here in San Diego. And the first thing I did, because I didn't have raised beds here yet, no in-ground garden here yet, it was just bare dirt, is I set up a grow bag garden, and it was in my backyard. I had about, I would say, 16 grow bags in a 4x4 sort of arrangement, like a nice little square. And I didn't have water. I only had one hose bib on the entire house. So I ran a hose out. And what I did is I used standard irrigation components. So, you know, you have that half inch drip tubing that kind of will feed into wherever you're going to irrigate. And then you punch into that and you can pull out your quarter inch drip line tubing. And what I did is I used what's called a adjustable 360-degree spike. So what it does is it's just a drip emitter that you can twist the top, and that'll let more or less water out in sort of a, almost it looks like octopus arms. It's sort of spraying out like that, and it'll just spray out. And so what's really nice is you can pull from your main drip line, you use quarter-inch tubing with no holes in it, you pop a little emitter on the end with the spike, and you put that spike down into each grow bag, and then there you go. And what's really nice is you can set the whole system up on a timer, so it'll go on and off, maybe a couple times a day, once a day, whatever your watering schedule is. But what's really cool is, of course, every grow bag is a different size, or you're growing a different plant. So my pepper is going to want less water than my tomato for sure, and my tomato's in a bigger grow bag. And that's why I really like those adjustable drip spikes, because on the pepper, I can twist it one way and I can let just a little trickle of water come out. And then on my tomato, I can open the gates completely and let it saturate the entire thing. And so it's a really sort of modular way to irrigate, especially when you add in the timer on there, because then you don't even have to turn the hose on and off. And kind of thinking about that vacation you're going on, Larry, this would be another good way, as long as you've set it up correctly, to make sure that your bags are getting water all throughout the summer.
Yeah, that's a really cool sounding system. Oh, man. Lori called in, couldn't hang online, but wondered if you could talk about some of your favorite organic fertilizers.
Yeah, sure. I mean, sure. So the ones that I tend to like, I really like all the fertilizer line from Espoma Organic. So that's just a company that I really like. They're out in the East Coast, and myself and Epic Gardening, we've been working with them for a couple of years now, so I'm a huge fan of them. But they have a lot of different mixes. So like their Biotone, I think, is fantastic. And that's a great starter one. So let's say I'm going to plant out a new grow bag, maybe with tomatoes, peppers, like I was saying. I'll always sprinkle at least a little bit of Biotone in there, because it's a good early feeder, but also it's got a decent amount of microbial bacterial inoculants to help sort of kickstart the soil. Because what's nice about growing in ground is, as long as you're taking care of the soil, is that soil is full of life, and it's doing a lot of work for you to help those plants grow. But in grow bags, sometimes, especially if you're using a fresh mix out of the bag, or you're mixing your own, sometimes you need a little bit of help to get that soil off to a good start. So I really like Espoma stuff. If we're talking just standard amendments that, you know, a company doesn't produce, well, of course, your own compost is going to be a pretty high quality input, as long as you're making it correctly. But I really like, one thing I'll say, I don't know if you guys have it out there, Larry, you can let me know if you do, but my city actually produces compost. And you can go, as long as you're a resident, you can go and load up for, I think, $10, as much as you want. And so yes, on my property here, I don't have a car that's big enough to do that. So I've actually been paying a guy to bring me about 6 yards at a time. So it does cost me a little more, maybe $100. But anyways, he comes and he'll dump it. And we've got really high quality compost that the city makes. And it's quite nice. And I've been just adding that directly to my beds, mixing it in. And we've had some good results there. If you're talking maybe some stuff you could do at home, I mean, you could go with worm castings. You could set up a very simple vermicomposting bin or bucket, and you could start turning around worm castings in about, I would say, a month, month and a half or so. You could start getting a reliable amount, and that's a really nice, first of all, it's a really nice way to repurpose all your food scraps. But second of all, it's a really light fertilizer. So if you're talking NPK ratios, it's it's like 111 or something like that. But what's nice is there's a good amount of trace nutrients, trace minerals, and a lot of microbial life in the worm castings. So when you add that to your beds or your bags, you find that the plants just seem to really, really love it. So I'm a huge fan of that. I always have worm composting going on. And then there's just some things that you could repurpose from around the house, or maybe your neighbor's got, maybe your neighbor mows his lawn or her lawn, and you can grab their bags of grass clippings and add them, as long as they're not spraying it with all sorts of nonsense, you know. Maybe some straw bales or hay bales, those types of things can be great too. So there's a lot of different organic amendments. The ones I tend to buy in are the ones from Espoma Organic, specifically that Biotone fertilizer.
Let's take another call. John in Mason, we'll turn to you. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. I just have a comment for the previous caller that called in about the concern for the cost of water and others that might feel the same. What about using, conserving rainwater? It's free, and it's a plentiful supply.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fantastic idea. Larry, how does it work in Wisconsin? Are you guys allowed to collect, and is there any regulation around that?
Yeah, we can collect rainwater, and a lot of people collect it off of their gutters and their downspout. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so we're fortunate here to have the same thing, and we're also unfortunate that we have way less rain than you guys do, and so I've actually made that a pretty big priority here at my homestead. I have about 1,000 square foot of roof to capture off of, and what I've done is installed gutters to capture, and then what we're going to be doing pretty soon is trenching into a huge cistern. So I think I can get about 5,000 gallons of rainwater, and like the caller said, it's free, it's fantastic, and actually, you ever notice how your plants do a lot better with the rain than they do with the hose water? Well, it's just a better quality water than what we're getting out of the tap, and why not use that? And so that's a fantastic idea, and I think if you set it up in Wisconsin, you're probably going to get a whole lot more than I will out here. So your water costs could get a lot lower.
All right. Kevin Esperito, our guest today. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@WPR.org. There's a new book out. It's called Grow Bag Gardening, The Revolutionary Way to Grow Bountiful Herbs, Vegetables, Fruits, and Flowers in Lightweight, Eco-Friendly Fabric Pots. Give a call. Shoot us an email. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network.
Today at 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Book 2 in the Cop Sisters series by Amy Stewart. This one is called Lady Cop Makes Trouble. It follows the further escapades of one of the country's first female deputy sheriffs, Constance Kopp, a woman who was not only ahead of her time, but sometimes even ahead of ours. Lady Cop Makes Trouble, today at 12:30, on Chapter a Day.
Coming up this afternoon on Central Time, Take Time for Tea. On this week's edition of Food Friday, our guest gives us recipes and advice to make delicious herbal beverages at home. That's Food Friday, today on Central Time, from 3 until 6.
Even as more people get the COVID-19 vaccine, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services urges us to follow 4 simple steps. Wear a mask, wash your hands, limit gatherings, and maintain social distance every time you go out. Together, we can save lives. Find more tips, including information about vaccine eligibility, appointments, and locations at dhs.wisconsin.gov or call 844-684-1064 toll-free.
Support for WPR comes from Prairie Nursery, committed to helping customers create sustainable environments that restore biodiversity in the garden and landscape, with a selection of native plants and seeds at prairienursery.com.
Support also comes from Eco Tree Company, dedicated to making an organic mosquito treatment that is bird, butterfly, and bee-friendly, custom-made with cedar extracts and essential oils. Details at ecotreecompany.com.
You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Kevin Esperito. He's an author and founder of Epic Gardening website, podcast, and YouTube channel. I've watched some of his YouTubes. He does a great job, and I'm really enjoying his new book. It's called Grow Bag Gardening, and it's perfect for porches, patios, decks, urban gardens, balconies, rooftops. You can pretty much anywhere, to be perfectly honest. So fun having him with us. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Kim sent us some photos of her past grow bag gardens. She uses the kiddie pool type system, too, that you mentioned. You can't see the grow bags, but one of their 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, there's a ton of grow bags there. Yeah, it was nice to see, and the plants look pretty darn healthy, too. Oh, man. Roland emailed to ask for some suggestions for plants that grow well together in grow bags.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Man, there's a lot of them. It's limited by, really, your creativity. I've got a couple plans in the book at the end of the book. It's chapter 6. It's just ideas. And, you know, I think you want to think about plants that just like the same growing conditions as the rest of the plants that are in the same bag. And so, you know, a fantastic idea, a very obvious one would be Mediterranean herbs, right? They're all going to like the same growing conditions. And you typically don't need one bag full of rosemary. You'd much rather have a mixed bag of, you know, rosemary, thyme, oregano, sage, basil, things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, you want to group things together like that. So a Mediterranean kitchen herb bag would be a fantastic idea. You could think about things like a salsa bag. You could do maybe a little determinate tomato, so shorter, bushier tomato, and you could do some onions around the side of that, and you could also do maybe some peppers if you had a bigger bag. So that would be a great idea. Another thing that really would work well would be sort of an Asian greens bag. So you could do mustard and pak choy or bok choy. Things like that would work really well. They all want, again, the same sort of growing condition, like a spring, fall style crop. So I would group it either by what they like or sometimes what you like, right? So you could do a berry bag. Strawberries would be a great idea. There's a lot of different options. There's a lot of different options. And it's kind of the same idea that would fit in a raised bed that you would plant together. You might have to finagle it or choose a specific variety to make it work, but it will also work in a grow bag.
Yeah. I love the salsa. When I saw that salsa bag idea in one of your last chapters, mm-hmm. I thought, oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, that's a fun one, especially out here in Southern California. That one works really well.
Man, Ron in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Back in that other millennium in a forestry course, wildland watershed management, the professor explained, roughly 102nd meridian, which is the Kansas-Colorado line. East of that, we deal with the English common law water law, which is take all you want as long as you don't hurt anybody else. And then west of that, Spanish common law rules, in that the first person to appropriate water gets all they want, then the second, then the third, then the fourth. So if out of X Creek, I took 4 million gallons of water to irrigate my farm, but I was the seventh person there, then in mild to severe drought years, I get little or nothing. So that's the explanation of why California is so much different than Wisconsin. Okay, my questions are about if the bags are side-by-side tight, or if you put a 1-inch saucer under a bag, does air pruning of the roots occur, or do the roots hit the side and go sideways? So would I have like a 1-inch deep solid mat of roots if I put it in a 1-inch saucer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's gonna prevent the air pruning to some degree. I think as far as the saucer goes, it's almost a trade-off. Do you want to have to water more because the saucer's not capturing water there? Or do you want to make sure that you get the perfect air pruning benefits? I think it's fine, completely fine to have a saucer. And the reason is pretty simple, because if it wasn't on a saucer, it'd be on the ground anyways. And so that's still going to get blocked off. The air pruning benefits really come from the roots dying when they hit the sides less than the bottom. Because what will happen in a typical container is they'll hit the sides, so they'll grow down and out, right? They'll hit the sides and then quickly spiral down to the bottom. And so, at least in my experience, it seems like the bigger problem with typical containers is that the sides don't offer the air pruning benefit. So as long as you've got the sides clear on a grow bag, I found that it's still quite good. And of course, you can grow a plant for a long time in a grow bag. It's still going to get a little bit root bound, because eventually it just would rather be in the actual ground where all plants evolved. But I would say a saucer is totally fine. It's a trade-off that I think is well worth making.
All right, Ron, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. A listener emailed to ask what you think of peat as an additive to soil and what other options are there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I try these days to use less peat if I possibly can. Do I do a perfect job? No, I don't. There's definitely times where I still use a peat-based mix. But the best alternative that's out there right now is coconut corn. So it's just coconut husks that have been ground up and shredded and washed and all of that. And, you know, I would say it's a pretty good alternative. The trick with that is you're almost trading off like which part of the environment you'd rather protect, I guess. So with peat, you're getting most of your peat out of Canada, and these peat bogs, they're pretty well managed, I have to say. But it is a resource that's relatively non-renewable. I mean, technically it's renewable, but just not on human lifetime scales. It takes thousands of years. And then with coconut core, what are you doing? Well, you're using what probably would have been a waste product, just the husk of the coconut, but you're actually using quite a bit of water to wash all the salt content out of it and all of that. And then they're transported quite a long way as well, because most of it's grown in Southeast Asia. And so I would say coconut core is a relatively solid alternative. It also has its issues, but if you want to avoid peat, that would be the one that I would go for. It's also really nice because they can compress those down into these bricks and you rehydrate the brick. So it's a little bit more economical to ship coconut core as well.
Interesting. Lily emailed to ask you if you have a favorite container strawberry variety. And strawberries, as you say in your book, are really easy to grow in a grow bag.
Yeah, they are. So I've got actually no strawberries in grow bags right now, but I do have some in a raised bed. The ones that I'm growing out here are Seascape and Albion strawberries. So those are both ever-bearing strawberries. Those are the ones I tend to prefer just because my climate, I don't even have to take the strawberries in for the winter. They might not fruit or grow as much, but you know, I don't have to bring them in. So I'd go for an ever-bearing myself. And that just means that it's going to probably fruit maybe twice, three times a year, as compared to a June bearing, which of course is going to fruit in June. So Seascape and Albion are the ones I'm growing right now. But you know, with strawberries, there's so many different varieties, and then there's different types. So you've got the June bearing and the ever bearing, like I just mentioned, and then you also have the day neutral ones. And so honestly, as far as growing a strawberry in Wisconsin, I might be hitting Google and looking for the varieties that work the best, or hitting the Master Gardener Association there, because they're going to know a lot better than I am. But the ones I'm growing at least are Seascape and Albion.
Peggy and Brilliant will give you a chance. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I heard your comment or your guest comment about cocoa beans being ground up and using that apparently in the soil instead of peat. I totally would agree with that, except that coconut beans can be poisonous to animals such as cats and dogs. So I have learned over the years after being a foster for a pug rescue that it is better to order like a pretty good size shipment of wood, shredded bark, and work that into the soil. We have clay. I also have raised beds because I got tired of fighting the clay, of course, but you're so much better off. And the thing is, there's always going to be shredded bark. They're going to be chipping trees and doing things. So to me, that is like the most environmentally safe thing you can do. Just wanted to add that.
All right. Thanks, Peggy, for calling. With that comes it's a good idea, but it does come at some cost in terms
yeah,
of...
Yeah, well, the, here's my thought on that. So I think maybe the caller misheard, because I wasn't recommending cocoa, as in the cacao bean. I was recommending coconut coir. So it's a coconut husk that's shredded up, which I don't believe is harmful to animals. I could be wrong. I know that cocoa beans are, though. So maybe that's what she was referencing. And then as far as the shredded wood, Larry, I think we might be on the same track here, where I probably wouldn't be mixing in shredded chips directly into my soil mixes. I don't think the results there seem to be too good by doing that. It seems like you get a lot of nitrogen lockup if you do that.
Yeah, it does tie the nitrogen up in the soil for sure. John called to ask if you can use a wicking method to bring water to the plants. And you kind of do that, don't you?
Yeah. So, I mean, that grow bag bathtub idea basically is that. Another thing you could do if you were really worried, let's say you had a relatively large grow bag, like 20, 25 gallons, you could put some of that coconut coir, like I just mentioned, in the bottom layer, maybe a couple inches of it. And that's a lot more water retentive. It holds on to a lot of water. And you could almost use that as sort of like a bottom sponge. And as you water, that's going to hold on to more water. And as the soil mix dries out up top, it'll wick it back upwards. So that's another way to do it. Those would probably be my two favorite ways, just going from the bottom upwards.
And Gloria in Ocano, she wondered if your opinion on adding gravel to the bottom of the container pots.
Yeah, I typically don't add gravel to my pots in general. And the reason why is it seems like you cause what's called a perched water table. And basically all you do is you shorten the height of the pot in general, the effective height of the pot. And so I typically don't add gravel. I don't think it really improves the drainage all that much. I think if you're really wanting to improve the drainage of your pot, you might as well just make a mix in general that has better drainage. And I think you're better off that way.
Yeah, I think you are as well. Well, our guest is Kevin Esperito. He's the author and founder of Epic Gardening website, podcast, and YouTube channel. He does a great job with all of them. And his newest book is called Grow Bag Gardening, The Revolutionary Way to Grow Bountiful Vegetables, Herbs, Fruits, and Flowers in Lightweight, Eco-Friendly Fabric Pots. Kevin Esperito, our guest for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. This is Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Net. We're talking about grow bags and other container gardening with Kevin Esperito. He's an author and founder of the Epic Gardening website, podcast, and YouTube channel. His latest book is Grow Bag Gardening, The Revolutionary Way to Grow Beautiful, Bountiful Vegetables, Herbs, Fruits and Flowers in Lightweight, Eco-Friendly Fabric Pots. So, do you garden in containers? What problems are you having? Do you have recommendations for varieties that do well in containers, maybe? I hope you'll join in. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Kim emailed to ask if you have ever seen any of Larry Hall's videos on YouTube about grow bag gardening. He came up with many styles of self-watering grow bag systems using float valves connected to a water source. He's passed on, but his legacy kind of lives on. There's a Facebook group he started, Rain Gutter Grow System. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I have picked up a couple of his videos over the years. Yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, there's just so many different ways to get the job done. It's really cool to see how everyone does it.
Yeah, it does for sure. And a listener called to suggest the production on the coconut fiber in many cases is not good for animals in those countries. And so, you know, do a little research before you purchase. So another comment there. So there are so many things in the book to talk about. I like the idea of blueberries in grow bags. They might be harder to grow, but you talk about blueberries in your book, and I often get questions about blueberries and growing my own blueberry plants and so forth. So you want to comment on blueberries and grow bags?
Sure, yeah. Are you growing them right now, Larry? Do you have a lot of experience doing it?
No, I have no experience. I do not, you know, the kind of soil that I've got to amend that soil to make it work for blueberries is more work than I care to take on, to be honest.
And that makes sense to me. Yeah. Well, that kind of what you just said is kind of why they make sense to grow in a container, but also in grow bags, especially here in San Diego. You know, my climate is blueberries aren't found naturally here, right? So you're going to have to engineer the environment a little bit to make it work. So what I've found is, you're at least here, if you guys probably had don't as much of a problem with this, but I need a low chill hour blueberry. So blueberries need chill hours or hours, you know, over the course of a year under a certain temperature. So I pick varieties that are under 200, 300 chill hours. I'm sure you guys get way more than that. So your variety of blueberries you can choose is way more expansive than mine. But with blueberries, like you said, Larry, the problem with them is that they just like a really sort of particular type of soil. So amending your in-ground soil, like you mentioned, is going to be probably not feasible. And so what I do in grow bags is I sort of refine my mix over the years. I use a camellia azalea mix or an acidic soil mix because they're going to want a pH of their soil about 4.5 to 5-ish, which is quite acidic, much more acidic than your annual.
Than we have here.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do about, 60%. So if you're mixing grow bags mixed for blueberries from scratch, I would do 60% of the mix would be that camellia azalea or that acid lover mix. 30% would just be a high quality compost, nice rich compost. And then 10%, and this kind of does break with what we just said earlier about mixing in the chips into the soil. 10%, I actually do put micro bark in, so just really small bark chips in there. And that's actually done really well for me, surprisingly, because you would think, okay, well, you know, mixing the chips in might tie up some nitrogen or what have you, but it seems like it works. And I guess my only reasoning behind that is where I've found blueberries in the wild is in a forest. They're all in forests, and you know that's where a lot of the dead wood is going to be, and it seems to work really well. And so that's why I think they're perfect for grow bags, because you're going to need to make a kind of funky mix and care for it in a particular way. And even me, I sometimes need to move them out of the sun. So grab the handles of the grow bag, move them out of the sun, and I'm good to go.
The one thing that one vegetable that I think a grow would do really well, and you talk about this in your book as well, as are potatoes. I would think that would be a great.
Potatoes are they're, first of all, I think, I don't know if everyone knows this on this show, but I'm a huge potato fan. I absolutely love growing them. And just yesterday I harvested out of my in-ground bed about 40 pounds of 6 different varieties. So I'm on a potato high right now myself, but they're fantastic to grow in grow bags because potatoes grow in sort of a unique way where we're eating the tuber of the plant. That's the potato tuber. And we also plant the potato tuber to make more. And so what I do in grow bags is my rule of thumb is typically one seed potato per 5 gallons. And I usually will grow them in about 15-gallon grow bags. And so I take a 15-gallon grow bag, You really don't need to be particular with the soil. It'll tolerate almost anything. I grew 40 pounds just yesterday in this hard clay soil I have in my backyard, so they're totally fine in that. And what I do is I'll put about 3-4 inches of soil in the bottom of the grow bag. I'll drop in my seed potatoes. I'll cover it up with about 4 more inches of soil. So that's only about 6-7 inches of soil plus the potatoes. There's not a lot of height to that, right? And so I just store them in the, you know, kind of like a cool place for a while because they're not sprouted yet. Once they start to sprout and I see some green growth come up above the surface, I'll roll the edges of the grow bag down. Now, that's something you can't really do in a typical container. So why roll it down? Well, the reason why is because then those little sprouts actually have access to light throughout the whole day. So they're going to grow a lot faster. And then as I get about 6 inches of green growth sprout, I'll just fill that up with another 6 inches of soil and keep doing that until I reach the top of the bag. And the potatoes are going to grow throughout that entire length of the grow bag. And then the beauty is when they're ready to harvest, and you know they're ready to harvest when, number one, you'll see potato flowers. That's when you know that you probably have what are called new potatoes, so just the small little potatoes. And then you might even see potato berries. It's a weird plant. It produces a berry as well. You can't eat the berry. And then they'll start to die back. The tops will start to yellow and brown and fall over. And that's when you know that your potatoes are about as big as they're going to get. And then another beauty of the grow bag, you can just flip it upside down, squeeze it out really easily, and you've got this big mass of soil, and you can go hunting for your potatoes. So it's one of the most fun crops you'll ever grow.
Yeah. No digging involved there.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, I love that. You have a way to make a cold frame for your grow bag as well, something that we can use, we could make some use of here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's a lot of different... Yeah, for sure. I mean, I actually, it's funny because I had my first experience with frost maybe end of December. It actually got frosted. It was like 40 degrees. And for us, that's extremely cold at night. And you know, I was like, oh, I guess I have to make cold frames for real instead of just demonstrating how they're done. But yeah, in a grow bag, what you can do, I mean, a very simple thing to do, you could just put like a milk jug over the top, cut a milk jug in half, put it over the top of your plants, and you've provided a little bit of protection. But another thing you can do is just take some bamboo stakes and maybe put one in each section of the grow bag, like north, south, east, west type of thing. And then you could just hang frost cover over it and clip it to the stakes. And you've got a little mini frost blanket there for you. Or, I mean, you really don't have to get complicated. You could just take the frost blanket, wrap it around the plant for the night, and you're good to go. Or drape it over multiple grow bags. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But again, something to think about is they're so mobile, they're so portable. You could also just pick them up, move them indoors for the night if you know it's going to be pretty cold, or put them in the garage.
Good points as well. And you mentioned the stakes. And trellises work well, and you... I watched you demonstrate it on one of your YouTubes, but you have some information on trellising and why trellises work pretty well in a grow bag.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a huge trellis fan, and I'm also a huge cheap trellis fan, and I like to build them out of bamboo. Trellises can get really expensive if you buy them at a nursery or at a big box store. And honestly, sometimes they don't even work that well when you buy them from those places. So I figure why not make your own and yeah, I mean, in a grow bag, I like to say, just like a container, I mean, you can grow anything. It's just you have to give the plant what it needs. And if you're growing peas, beans, you know, a tomato, squash, cucumbers, these types of plants, you could just let them flop in a bag. It's just they're not going to do as well. And so what I like to do is if you're going to go with something purchased, let's say you're doing tomatoes, I would go with a cylindrical cage, not a conical cage, not one of those classic cheap tomato cages. I'd go with one that's cylindrical and try to match it to the diameter of the grow bag. So then you can just slide it right on top and you have a lot of beautiful support there. If you want to go more DIY, I don't know how accessible you guys have bamboo stakes out there, Larry, like at the nursery, you can get some bamboo stakes.
You can get them here, yes.
Yeah, something like that. Just any sort of slender little stake. And if you get that and some twine and you learn a couple simple lashings, you could just do a quick Google, like a bamboo twine lashing. It's really easy. You don't need anything besides stakes, twine, and some scissors to cut the twine. You can lash up just about any type of trellis that you could possibly imagine. I've done sort of a teepee style trellis. So you could do peas where all the stakes go to one major point at the top and the peas just sort of grow up in this nice little mountain type of look. You could build a standard trellis, like a flat trellis against the backside of your raised bed or your grow bag. I've even built trellises that have linked multiple grow bags together. So maybe I was growing something that was vining like peas, right? And it's going to climb and use the tendrils to go across. Well, instead of going straight up in one bag, I made multiple bags and I just put a stake in each of them and lashed some bamboo trellis twine across. And there you go. And so it's a lot of different ways to support. I mean, the simplest way, I like to keep it really simple sometimes, just if you have a chain link fence at your house, just put the grow bags next to the chain link fence and there you go. You don't even need to do anything. You just grow something right up and you're perfect. Probably makes the chain link look better too.
Yeah, and you do have some nice photos I see of in your book about the trellises and making them and the way that you wind the cord or whatever you're using around the bamboo poles.
Yeah,
so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's hard to describe over the radio. But basically, you're going over and under the twine, over and under the stakes, back and forth a few times, and then you lock those lashings in by just spinning the twine in between each of them. Again, probably not making a lot of sense, but you can Google it and it'll show up really quickly online. It's really, really easy.
Yeah, it's cool. I was surprised, just on a whole nother thing, I was surprised to see you having corn growing in your bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the most optimal thing to grow in a grow bag because, you know, corn's going to want at least a decent little block of plants next to each other because it's wind pollinated. And so you want those tassels up top to be agitated by the wind, the pollen falls down, hits the silks on the corn and then pollinates the corn. And so, you know, growing one corn plant in a grow bag is probably not ideal, but if you do have one of those long, sort of those squat but wide grow bags, like I was talking about, maybe that big 50 or 100-gallon one or one of those raised bed style ones. Yeah. I mean, corn will work really well. You plant them maybe 6 inches apart, plant a big square of them and let them go. And they'll do really, really well.
Do you ever run into, I'm sure you must, disease or insect problems? We talked about one insect problem earlier, but scale, for example, does that ever come up? And is it worse or better in a grow bag?
You know, I haven't had a whole lot of issues with pests in a grow bag, at least not anything that's outside the norm that you'd have in a typical container. Haven't run into scale a lot, but that's probably just where I live. I'm going to hit aphids or the cabbage white moth. Those types of things are going to be a lot more prevalent. Actually, my new house, I've got a lot of those pincher bugs or those earwigs. And I think in small amounts, they're fine in the garden, but we don't have them in small amounts. They're absolutely everywhere and they just like to munch up everything. And so nothing out of the ordinary, I would say. I mean, I think the only thing you might run into disease-wise is, it's not really a disease, but you might get some algae buildup on the exterior of the grow bag, because the water's falling out of the sides. And so, you know, water plus light plus some sort of nutrient equals algae growth. And you might get a little green buildup, but that's not going to harm the plant. That's just going to look a little bit unseemly.
Yeah, you're right about that. I kind of chuckled when I found your section on fruit trees and growing citrus in a bag. I don't know how that would, I guess it could work here. I mean, I have limey, the lime tree that sits outside all summer and then has to come back inside in the winter in a south-facing window. But what about citrus in a bag?
I think the thing, it's tricky because in my climate, citrus actually is one of the few fruit trees that we can just put in the ground and it does well. But in a colder climate, citrus in a container like limey, perfectly fine. The thing that's nice about the grow bag is it's going to be a little more well-draining than your average container, which citrus just so happens to like. And so it's kind of nice where you can get a nice little citrus mix for the grow bag, and then you don't really have to worry about killing your plant by overwatering it, which is probably the number one killer of citrus that people are growing in pots, is they're caring for it maybe a little too much. and they're watering it too much, and then the leaves are going to start falling off like crazy. It's kind of hard to recover the plant after that point. And so I find that they work really well in grow bags. You just want to size that bag up so that you don't have to continually water it over and over. I would say, you know, 15 gallons at an absolute minimum. You could go up to 25 gallons on citrus for sure.
Yeah, you would. And I know with limey, I've had to change pots.
Right, right. What size on limey are you at right now?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. It's pretty large.
It can be kind of tough to move him, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. That's the issue. Somebody was wondering, tell more about how'd you get this? How'd you get started in all of this, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird story because I didn't grow up as a gardener, and no one in my family, my grandfather gardened, but I didn't really connect with it at a young age. I connected with it in my early 20s. So I had come out of college. It's really a weird story, Larry. I came out of college. I came out with an economics and accounting degree, but I didn't really care for college that much, I guess. I was playing poker online on the internet all throughout college, and that was enough for me to like pay my way through school. So I learned how to play poker well enough to pay my way through the school, but I didn't really care about the school that much. And so when I got out of school, I ended up quitting playing poker, but I didn't have anything else to do, right? I didn't have a job lined up or anything like that. And so I kind of fell into a video game addiction of sorts. And I was playing hours and hours and hours every single day. And it just got to a point where I was like, this is just too much. I mean, I might as well be playing poker if this is what I'm going to do with my life. And so I ended up trying to just get outside and get off the computer. And I picked up gardening as a hobby with my brother one summer. And I just really got into it. It hooked me for some reason or another. I think just watching how the plants grow, getting the harvest, understanding more about how all these different things, there's an endless number of plants you can grow. It just never stops. And so that's what hooked me. And then, you know, being a guy who grew up sort of on the internet and was into computers and things like that, I started a blog about it, and that was Epic Gardening. And, you know, here we are, I guess, 8 years later now, and this is what I do for a living. And so it's sort of a funky story, but, you know, it's the truth.
And what do people find on your, tell people what they're going to find on your website and your YouTube channel and so forth.
Sure. So the website is just epicgardening.com, and that's just blog articles. So it's, you know, how do you grow strawberries, how to plant cilantro indoors, like these types of articles on or edibles and ornamentals. And then the podcast, it's a daily show. So it's really quick episodes, maybe like 5 minutes, and you can just pick the ones you want to listen to. And I'll have guests on. We'll talk about different things like tomatoes. We'll have a whole week on tomatoes. We'll have a whole week on, you know, growing houseplants indoors, that type of stuff. And then everything else, YouTube and the Instagram and all the social media, it's all video. And those are just either short bites or on YouTube, at least, it's really in-depth tutorials. Like later on today, I'll have a tutorial coming out on three different tomato trellis designs that you can make, from really cheap ones to kind of fancy ones. And, you know, hopefully that gives a lot of people inspiration. So, yeah, it's Epic Gardening everywhere. Kind of, it's almost a choose your own adventure. However you like to consume information, I've got some stuff out there for you.
That's great. You know, Tim in Pembine, I think, has a quick question. Let's go there. Tim, hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Okay. I was wondering about hydroponics, aquaponics, like through, you know, a fish kind of a run through with water, or maybe you could use these bags for, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge hydroponics fan. That's when I was telling the story earlier about how I got into gardening. That is how I got in. I was growing hydroponically at the very start, but I haven't done much with aquaponics, but I've toured a bunch of aquaponics farms. It'd be tricky to get that done in a grow bag because you need something for that water to sit in. I mean, I think the best way you could do it in a grow bag, hydroponics at least, aquaponics would probably not be possible, but hydroponics, you could grow in pure coconut coir, right? Like that amendment we talked about earlier, Larry. And then you could use hydroponic nutrients. So you could, when you water, you're actually watering with nutrient water. So it's basically fertilizer water. And you could grow that way. So basically you've just swapped out the soil for an inert medium, not something with no nutrients in it. and then you could just water in that way. So that would be one way you could grow hydroponically in a grow bag for sure.
There you go, Tim. Thank you so much. Well, I've really enjoyed talking with you, Kevin. I hope we have a chance to do this again. I'm really enjoying your book. Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Larry. I always love coming on.
Kevin Esperito's book is Grow Bag Gardening, and it is the revolutionary way to grow all kinds of things in friendly, eco-friendly fabric pots. Great to have. We'll get him back. We'll do this again. Thank you for listening. The Weather Guys will be back on Monday. We'll talk about also about John's new book about the history of meteorology. Thank you again for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.